This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you. Sven Sundgaard is going to join us a little bit later on to talk about the weather. Dan here producing, Brett here as well. Hi, guys. Right into it right away. Cliff Schechter, of course, Unprecedented is the podcast, as you can listen to that. Just fantastic stuff. And I've told him today he can't swear on the air because I know he's hopping mad about what's been going on in Texas in the Supreme Court. He's kind enough today to join us to talk about this. Cliff, first of all, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, as always.
Sure. I thank you for being my therapy today.
Oh, you are more than welcome. All right. How about, Holly, we'll do pleasantries first. You're in Cincinnati. Are you an Ohio? Are you an Ohio State fan?
Sure. Not huge, because, you know, even my wife, who's from here originally, her family, they all went to, you know, Miami of Ohio. Great school down in this part of the state, but my grandfather-in-law did get his PhD there.
Okay.
So, so we'll rule for Ohio State, even though we're not, go ahead. Why? The big game coming up?
There's a game tonight. Ohio State is at Minnesota. Usually we get to wait until like late September to have our hopes and dreams crushed, but a good chance that's going to happen tonight, so thanks.
you think Ohio State's going to do it to Minnesota tonight? Okay, well, I cannot take the blame for that.
Okay.
I don't know what would happen if you played Miami. My wife's walking through here. The chances are I could ask her. It wouldn't go that great if Minnesota played Miami. And my wife just said that her high school would beat Miami.
Well,
and
the Gophers,
where I went to school, Penn, you guys literally could just sneeze on the court and beat us. So you can't really blame me for Ohio State. That one's not on me, Matt.
I'm not
Yankees.
Just,
my fault, but not Ohio State.
I not even Penn. I'm William Penn. Go fighting mad Quakers. There you go. I think football, we can stick with baseball, although I went to the Twins-Cubs last night. That was one of the worst baseball games I've ever seen in my entire life. Oh, my gosh, was that atrocious.
Oh, isn't it terrible? You know, did you remember that? I think I sent this to you, texted you, the game where, like, it kind of went national where a cat ran on the field at Yankee Stadium
and
they couldn't catch it.
Yeah.
So we were at that game. We're back in New York visiting my mom, my family, and people kept doing these records of, like, the Yankees have won this many games since the cat ran out in the field. Like, we were at one of the single worst games of the season. They were awful. They couldn't score any runs. They lost to the Orioles, and that's quite a feat. And since then, you know, they're whatever they are. I mean, I think they've won, like, you know, 18 of 26 of 25 games. Or, I mean, they've been on fire. They had that 13-game winning streak. So that's the kind of luck I am. Cats show up. I mean, cats are cute, but it was, you know, we have some at home here. I didn't really go for that.
We got to get into this. The Texas law that got passed, as well as also the Supreme Court ruling. But I want to remind people, and you came on the air with us. I mean, this was after the 2016 election. It was like the week afterwards. And you and I basically just sat there and said, especially when referring to these you know, and Bernie fans who basically said, we are not going to vote for Hillary, we're going to stand out, which, you know, ended up in enough states being the difference maker and costing Hillary Clinton the election. And the reality is, as I said, I don't think these people understand the damage they just did. And here we are. And it's never, this country is never about instantaneous. Sure, Mount St. Helens blows up. That is instantaneous and things react to that. But the reality is, when you're talking about the political scheme, there is an inertia that follows actions, which takes usually 5 to 10 years to see the real damage that has been done. Here we are 5 years later, and now the Supreme Court that has been created by Trump and the puppet masters that were behind him has now basically, you know, put Roe v. Wade on death watch itself.
It's Texas, the second biggest state in the country with 29 million people, has banned abortion.
Yes.
In effect, right now. I mean, I don't know, you almost know where to begin, but, like, I'll sound conspiratorial, but, you know, I'm a student of history, and the 1970s when they were creating the American Legislative Exchange Council, I'm sure you're familiar with, ALEC, to organize state reps to do bidding in the states, when they were launching, you know, think tanks, when the Heritage Foundation was starting to put out their papers and all this. These are the things that they were planning for. They had a long-term plan that involved funding and radicalism, and they've been on that, and we've derailed them at times with some good candidates and good elections, but we've never stopped. You know, we've never been willing to put in the media infrastructure and other things. I could talk a lot about what it takes to stop them along the way, and this was always the end goal, because they didn't care about what polling said. They didn't care about any other stuff like we worry about. There was zealotry and there was money, and they were going to make it happen. And, like, I don't think you could have any better example of what I'm saying than what just occurred. Yeah. You had five justices. I'm sorry, you want to jump in?
No, by all means, you're absolutely on fire. I'm just agreeing with you wholeheartedly.
Okay, I don't want to filibuster here, which, by the way, shouldn't exist, but that's something else tied to this, all of this. You know, five justices, numerous of whom have sketchy backgrounds, who are no longer, because that was part of their plan, is we weren't going to put conservative judges anymore on the court. Warren Berger, people like that were actually judges. We were going to put Republican operatives on the court. And that's actually what happened. You know, I mean, Ginni Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, was part of the uprising on January 6th. She helped plan it. She may have had a role in it. This is the wife of a Supreme Court justice. He's always been an operative. You know, Neil Gorsuch's mom was an operative, an anti-environmentalist who was appointed, a Colorado state, you know, a legislator appointed to the EPA by, guess who? Ronald Reagan. He came from an operative family, okay? Jesus, I mean, Brett Kavanaugh literally was a political operative working in Ken Starr's office trying to put out sleaze on Bill Clinton. This was always what they were going for. And they had the money behind them, and they were electing people in just enough, the kinds of people in states who would do this. So anybody who doesn't believe this was planned, as in the people in Texas, you know, various folks in Texas weren't talking to the Supreme Court and knew what was going to happen ahead of time, I have a bridge to sell you. They knew what was going to happen, and they were told exactly how they could do it, which is just do it in a way where you don't hand over enforcement to the state. You hand it over to people in the state, which, by the way, is a whole other sickening thing. They've created bounties for people to tell on each other. Tell me this doesn't feel like a fascist country. They've created bounties for snitches to go and tell on people who are getting abortions or, you know, helping people get abortions or anything like that. And because of that, it's the weakest and flimsiest of legal arguments. I'm not a lawyer, but I've asked lawyers I know, and they're just like, you know, this whole garbage is the last thing I'll say. I'll let you, you know, talk again, which is, you know, their claim is, oh, well, you know, this there's no antecedent here. There's no precedent. This is a different kind of law. We can't just, you know, we'll have to take up Roe later. We can't just reject this out of hand, blah, blah, because of the mechanism where people enforce it and not the state. Meanwhile, on COVID, which there's no previous mechanism for, they jumped right in to stop California and ban California from putting some of the COVID restrictions on, even though there's nothing there. The same thing with the short-term ban on evictions. So clearly, they're just liars. They're just the worst and most awful right-wing liars. They jumped in when it's in their ideological interest. I mean, anybody who thinks this court has any legitimacy at all, they have. You know, Justice Roberts, you might be able to say, who did join the dissent here, maybe he is a conservative and actual judge. You know what I mean? Who we disagree with, who's done horrible things, but at least believes in being a judge. The other five they now have sitting there, they're just right-wing operatives who hide behind black robes. That's it.
Well, and I will say this, Roberts, once again, is a, you know, he's a moderate Republican. And I think that he also is trying to save the Republican Party from itself. But I'll get to that here in a little bit. But the, you know, you look at this law, there's a lot of legal experts I've said is like, well, good luck trying to make this stick, because how you're going to be able to basically force someone, a court to force someone to pay, like if someone from Texas goes to Minnesota where abortion will be legal, and gets an abortion done, and they try to get this bounty on them in Texas, how in the world are you going to enforce a private citizen suing someone for something they legally did? And the courts are basically, it's going to be really interesting to see. I guarantee you some Texas court might try to find some way to do it, but you're going to, you know, a priest or a nun that actually steps up and helps out someone who's trying to get an abortion, if you're going to start, you know, prosecuting them, it's going to be interesting to see how this is going to go, because there's a lot of people that say this really isn't as cut and dry as these Republicans want to think it is. How are you going to basically penalize, you know, force people to pay other private citizens money for doing something they legally could do?
Well, I mean, think of everything that you know, just brings up. Just put the shoe on the other foot, right? What if New York or California right now, okay, that's what you did. We're banning firearms and we're banning pollution. And we're going to do it. We're going to have people enforce it and give them each bounties to do it. So you can't overturn that. I wish one of them would do it just to see. I don't even believe in banning all firearms, but I think they should do it. Right now, I think New York, California, you pick a state, Massachusetts, should do it just to show what hypocrites these guys are and how quickly they'd jump out if they did that. Oh, well, you know, hey, it's not the state doing it. We've got people enforcing it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's utterly garbage, okay? But they don't care. They just need a fig leaf because they're not serious people. They're not honest people. They're not real conservatives who believe within a democratic system we fight out our values and we come to some sort of either a compromise or somebody wins, somebody loses, we're a democracy. They're authoritarians, and they think they belong in power, and they don't really care about how they get it. And it's been quite clear for some time now that this was a faction of the Republican Party, but it has grown stronger and stronger to where it makes up the vast majority of the Republican Party. What they just did is utterly insane. And let's throw the other part in. You know, the biggest reason when those of us who fought for things like background checks on guns and that kind of thing is because of so often it's, you know, it's domestic abusers and people like this who you can predict almost are going to be the ones who are going to commit acts of gun violence, right? Well, now the state of Texas has incentivized them to, hey, chase down your ex-girlfriend. You suspect she's having, you know, she's going to get an abortion? Chase her down. You can make $10,000 if you catch her. So now you've got some mentally unstable loon who, by the way, they passed permitless carry in Texas. So they've gotten rid of all kinds of, any kind of background check to get a concealed carry weapon you can carry around with you anywhere. So you're concealing, you know, your AR-15, carrying it with you under your coat, chasing, you know, however many of your ex-girlfriends because you're a lunatic. This is the behavior they've incentivized, basically, like, they've deputized, like, crazy people to go, it's vigilante justice is what it is.
How about causing someone who's been the victim of a rape to have to pay their rapist $5,000 because the rapist turned them into trying to get an abortion? And so not only do you have the person getting raped, but then when they try to get an abortion to remove the fetus from the product of the rape, that they then have to go to court and actually have to pay the rapist who raped them money. That is insanity.
Right. And the 12-year-old victim of incest, she's got to have the baby.
Yeah.
And that's what we're looking at. There's no exceptions to this or anything. Or her dad, who molested her, may get $10,000 for pointing out that she's illegally getting an abortion. I mean, it's a dystopia to say how ridiculous it is to say that, you know, all of us who predicted that this is where it was headed, but we were all the hysterical ones, according to these brilliant minds in the media who sat and got everything wrong about Afghanistan recently as they sat there and wouldn't shut the hell up about things they knew nothing about. But when it comes to this, this is just he said, she said, apparently, just like, you know, storming the Capitol and trying to overthrow democracy. I mean, Democrats say this, Republicans say that. It's equal.
I mean, it's lunacy. Cliff Schechter kind enough to join us. Cliff, let's not skip past this. I mean, obviously, the fact that this has basically made abortion illegal in Texas is one element of it. I went back and tried to remember all the times a state or a country has imposed a rat on your other on your neighbor law, and it's really a blockbuster list here. You got East Germany and the Stasi run regime that was over there, Stalin's Russia, and of course Nazi Germany. This is the technique, and I guarantee you, all the people in Texas that are for that say, well, it's different this time. But that's what they always say when they put a law into place where it's a civilian turning on other civilians to turn them in as a police state. Because that's clearly what Texas, to get to this point, has embraced, a police state where the civilians are trying to arrest other civilians.
Correct. They're always pure and good. you know, and their view is different. What they're doing is different. These are the people who scream and yell and come up with every conspiracy theory and stupid thing that you can think of as to why they shouldn't put masks on their faces. Their body, their choice. Oh, wait, sorry, you're a woman who was raped? No, not your choice anymore. I mean, nothing they say makes any sense. So you just have to go to the point of they're right-wing fascist ideologues who believe that white men should be in power and control everybody else the way it used to be in good old Texas and in some of these other places, really most of this country. And that's what they want back. And that's what they're driving towards. Doesn't matter. The rest of it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, Scott Desjarlais, who's a doctor or dentist, whatever he is, from Tennessee, who's a right-winger from like a rural area, paid for a mistress to get an abortion. That's not even a question. That's out there. He was reelected. It doesn't matter when he does it. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Jason Miller, who tried to poison his you know, Trump's guy, who tried to poison his ex so she'd have an abortion by putting something in her drink. That's not a question anymore either. I mean, these guys, whenever they do it, it's all fine because they'll still be able to get them. That's what the whole point of it is, because they have the power. It's their country. They get to control everything. They make the decisions. Everybody else just has to sort of suffer under them. And we have to all decide if that's what we want. You know, and I guess this is where I've really just, I won't curse, but I have absolutely had it with, I'm done with Cinnamon Mansion. I don't care what the political calculations are. I don't care what states they're from. You know, I worked and did TV ads for Joe Biden, and I'm a Biden supporter, but I don't care if it's the Biden administration. I don't know if it's Chuck Schumer. This is our democracy here, and this is getting ridiculous. And somebody needs to take these two people in a room and Lyndon Johnson them. And I don't care if they come out of the room beaten to shreds, quite frankly. I'm done with them. Because, again, you know, like, and I shouldn't say that. I'm not advocating violence. No. But they should go. But honestly, somebody needs to get in their faces and get real and make it quite clear to them they will lose Democratic Party support, that they are done.
Oh, I think they should be thrown out of the Democratic Party. I think that Biden needs to talk to the head of the DNC and say, you know, here's the deal. If they're not going along with us, then they're not part of the Democratic Party, and that's just that. One last thing I do want to make sure I mention about this, and this is – you and I both know this is coming, that in wealthy communities across Texas, in luxury strip malls, there's going to be a brand-new business that opens up tomorrow. It's called an anti-babyoscopy. And it's although everything is similar to an abortion, the same people that pass this law are going to say, whoa, 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 that's not an abortion, that's an anti-babyoscopy. And the wealthy white people of Texas will not be impacted by this. They'll be able to go right into their luxury strip malls and get their health care taken care of when they want to on any time, because that's the reality. They're not going to go on out there and jeopardize their voting base or their funding base, which is wealthy white Texans. So they're going to make sure that those people have an option for an abortion legally in Texas. This is not about them. This is about the poor people, the middle class, everyone else having to. It's not about religion. It's about control.
No, exactly. Again, the law doesn't apply to them, as we just, you know, we're talking about. So they don't care. Their rich funders are going to be able to hop on, you know, their private jets and go wherever they want to get an abortion, or they're going to be able to drive across state lines. Does anybody think they're going to enforce it? They're going to do anything to their rich funders who do this kind of stuff? Of course they're not. No. Again, this is for everybody else. Those folks will be just fine. I'm sure somebody will have a business model where they'll have a private jet that flies people wherever they want to go for their abortion or whatever they want to call it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's just no doubt who all these kinds of things are aimed at. And again, it that's all it's about. In the end, is we have this faction of people. They are not a majority. They are in a certain number of states that, because of our flawed system, get as many senators as states 20 times their size. But in most states, they are not a majority. In most of the bigger states, they're a solid minority. And if they weren't vote suppressing in Texas already, there's a good chance that a bunch of these Republicans already would have been kicked out of power in Texas. But, you know, now with what they're doing, because, again, of Manchin and Sinema, who should not have a day of peace, as far as I'm concerned. In other words, do not touch them. But you want to harass and hassle them and yell at them wherever they go? You should. They literally shouldn't have a moment of quiet the rest of their lives. Again, this is about our democracy, and I'm done playing. So really, for me, anything outside of violence is on the table.
Well,
and you know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and we are at the point where if Democrats don't understand the game they're playing right now, and who they're playing with, they're trying to do an aw shucks checkers game with Republicans who frankly are playing Vulcan chess, and they're getting their caboose handed to them, and they're acting like minor victories are some sort of didn't we win? And I'm like, I'm tired of it. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
No, I mean, look, it's great. How Biden got his COVID bill passed was awesome. I was a big supporter. Getting the infrastructure stuff done, great. But now it's time to pivot to say he's got some major accomplishments. The economy is going to rebound. We've got people vaccinated. We're moving on that front even still with all the anti-vaxxers and the idiocy out there. We now have to pivot to taking care of our democracy so that we keep it.
Yeah.
You know, and absolutely. I'm sorry, it's not vote in such high levels that they can't. No. Sorry, there's no amount of voting that they can't find a way to screw with or suppress if you allow them to have absolute partisan control in the states they now control, because they have since 2010. I live in one of those states where there's, you know, maybe a 3-4 point differential in voting most of the time, and one party has 65 to 75% of control of the legislatures. It's ridiculous.
And Cliff, we're kind of at the end of the time here, but I mean,
it's okay. I could yell for another hour, but it's probably better that somebody cut me off.
I'm glad we're a little bit of therapy for you. Blue Amp Strategies is still going, right?
It sure is. Yep, we're going strong. We just did some ads on the infrastructure bill. We'll be doing a lot of stuff, public relations, TV, that kind of thing for good progressive companies, as well as good progressive candidates, as well as good progressive organizations. So
Blue Amp Strategies.
Keep on fighting, my friend.
BlueAmpStrategies.com. BlueAmpStrategies.com. Of course, Unprecedented is the podcast. I'll link to both of those a little bit later on. Cliff, all my best, man. The fight is in front of us, and we've got to get everyone going in the right direction at this point. I appreciate the time today, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, as always, buddy.
Take care. Cliff Schechter, kind enough to join us. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I want to piggyback. I'm not going to have time right now. I want to piggyback on what Cliff said, but I'm going to save that for the next after this next break, and I want to break it down because we have to understand how badly the Democrats are misplaying and Democratic voters are misplaying the situation and understanding the situation, because this is a disaster created by our own hands. It is. The Democrats, the DFL, they have created this disaster. And I'll explain that here in just a little bit. One quick news break I did want to make sure I mentioned to you. An arrest has been made in the fatal shooting of one driver by another one night early 2 months ago on Highway 169 in Plymouth. A 33-year-old Chicago man is jailed currently in Decatur, Illinois, on suspicion of second-degree murder in the death of Jay Baughton, 56, who was shot July 6 while driving south on the highway. Although authorities identified him during the news conference, Star Tribune generally does not identify the suspects here. Police Chief Eric Fadden said the man was arrested August 24th, jailed in central Illinois city of Decatur, where he remains pending his extradition to Hennepin County. As of Thursday afternoon, court records did not show the man had been charged, and Fadden declined to comment when a criminal complaint would be filed. He did say the man has a criminal history, but did not offer any other further details at this point. Fadden declined to disclose how the detectives were able to track down the suspect, saying the investigation remains very active. Police did say the arrest occurred without incident at about 10:40 a.m. on the 24th. This was truly a needle in the haystack. They did find, I don't know if you remember, they found the vehicle, although there was a lot of mystery about how they found the vehicle. And they really hadn't put out too much information about where they found it, how they found it, if there was any connections to it. And, you know, I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of information that comes up in the next few days. But even still, it seems like I don't know. And maybe it's a case because with the sign that they haven't filed the charges yet, they're not quite sure if they can. I don't know. But they it does seem like there are some questions here on how, you know, why they're being so vague in regards to some of the details so far. The suspect's vehicle, late model Chevy Suburban, was located on July 23rd. Police initially did not say where the SUV was found, what led them to them, although Fadden said that locating the vehicle certainly provided information for our detectives to move in the direction where they are at today. They did not say who owns the SUV connected in some way. So there's still some a lot of information there. So we'll have to see exactly how much more of this breaks down. 952-946-6205. I want to actually once again come back. We'll take a break. Come on back. And when I do, I want to talk more about how Democrats have to change. And I mean change dramatically if they're going to survive at this point. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. And by the way, I want to make sure I say something here. And I, once again, I want to be very clear about this because it's just something. I mean, when you say choice means each individual has their own choice. I'm a guy. I can't have a kid. But I will say this personally. I'm against abortion. I am personally. But that's where my opinion on this issue ends. There it is. Funny, isn't it? Funny. I know a lot of people who are anti-choice who will scream. It's like, no, you're just no good if you're not going out there. My religion, which you are basing your entire thing on, says we're all judged by our own actions on this planet, right? That's what it says. And so it's not up to me to determine what other people do. You go do what you want to do. You leave your life as best as you think it's going to be. And good luck. All my best. That's just how it is. And so when I say this, because when I look at what's going on in Texas, like I said, if you think that the wealthy white people in Texas are not going to be able to just drive down the street, forget about taking a plane someplace else. They're going to be able to drive down the street to their high-end mall and walk into a new clinic that's going to offer an anti-babyoscopy and get it done there. And when someone says, hey, wait a minute, isn't that an abortion? They're going to say, how dare you call that an abortion, even though it's basically the same exact thing. How dare you? Heck, they'll make sure health insurance covers it as long as it's wealthy white people getting it. This is wrong. You can't be doing it like this, and you sure as heck shouldn't have citizens turning on other citizens. But it does bring up a point. And Cliff, in his frustration with Democrats that shoot themselves and the party in the foot, my God, we can talk about this. I remember – I'm going to go back in history two times here. First of all, I remember after the election of 2010, there was my first year here on AM 950. And it was becoming clear that as we were covering that night, and I was up until like 2 in the morning watching these atrocious results come in. And it was amazing to me because I just sort of said, wow. And I thought about this a lot after that night. I said, why in the world did Democrats just not show up? And it was I sat down with a Democratic leader at that point about a week afterwards, and she was just livid. And she was like, I can't believe these people didn't show up. And it was at that point because the last conversation I'd had with her was about a month before the election, and she was of the mindset of sitting there and screaming and like, why were the Democrats so stupid to try to pass the Affordable Care Act? Why? Now, and I just looked and said, wait a minute here. The Affordable Care Act should have been a bellwether moment for the Democratic Party. It, the beginning of government, you know, affordable health care for its citizens delivered via the government because no one else was providing it. And you and a lot of Democrats, the second it got passed, were out there saying, yeah, we're so sorry. We should have never done this. We were really bad. And now it's funny because most of those same people who were so critical of the Affordable Care Act passing are now will tell you about, well, isn't it great? It doesn't go far enough. We need, you know, government health care. But it was remarkable how they themselves And whether it was because they were manipulated by the Republicans or whatever the case may be, they themselves were convinced, we just killed ourselves in every election because we tried to give affordable health care to people. And I'm like, did you even hear what you just said? It didn't make any sense. What else didn't make sense was the election of 2016. And I know that there are a lot of Bernie fans out there who proudly called up this radio station and talked about it. I didn't vote. Ha! I bet you next time you better go with Bernie. And I'm like, wow, you have no idea what you just did you? And they're still convinced. They want to just ignore the general election. They just want to sort of kind of go back in time and, you know, try to relive the fact that Bernie did not pay attention and didn't do squat in the southeastern United States. And by the time the southeastern primaries were all done, Hillary had an insurmountable lead. And that does not include superdelegates. Trust me, I've done the math. I actually made a post about it up on Progressive Citizen X. Bernie lost. He just lost. And to see people who say, sure, I agree with her on 90% of things, but because I don't agree with her on 100% of things, I'm never going to vote for her, and she's no better than Donald Trump. And I'm like, you are a fool. And yet, that's what happened. Come the election time, the fools decided to be fools. And the fools decided to not participate. And yeah. You know, the people that basically threw a temper tantrum and did not vote because they were so angry because Hillary Clinton was the nominee, well, that cost enough states, and there you go. And we get Trump. And what I said in the day after that election, and I said, and I kept saying for the next month, is that the people that sat out there and said, aha, I hope the Democrats, I said, do you have any idea what you just did? Do you have any idea what you just did? And it's not just about the disastrous 4 years Trump was in office. Every president, well, maybe not William Henry Harrison. He died, you know, 6 weeks into his term. But pretty much every – well, and I'm making an argument too. Even William Henry Harrison, even with his death, caused the need for this country to understand, okay, the right of secession. Does the vice president, does the chief of staff, does the secretary of state become – who becomes the president after that? And so – technically, even William Henry Harrison, even though he had such a short term, the ripples of his presidency and the aftermath of said presidency still play today, that are still in there. Pretty much every president has had a moment or two in their presidency where the long-lasting impact of said decisions still are with us today. That is the power of the presidency. Republicans were purposely holding open one Supreme Court seat. They likely were going to have a second Supreme Court seat. And they ended up, you know, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, they quickly threw in a third. And so Donald Trump, an incompetent boob of a man, was able to place three Supreme Court justices on that Supreme Court. Three. Those three will be the deciding factor in regards to the election. Yeah, and you know, now I shouldn't say that, to government policy for probably the next decade. And that is the really unfortunate thing is that you have this case where people just didn't understand the repercussions of sitting it out. I've talked about this before. I'm going to have to go. I want to go over this again and just and make sure we understand this. Let's look at the GOP. Now, Democrats, you may not like them. And the reality is that those two pivotal moments, 2010 and 2016, gave us what we have today. Because I'm going to say something that you might not like, but it is a reality. They've legally done what they have done. Absolutely. You may not like it. You may call it cheating. You may call it being dishonest. But they don't care. The Republicans will use every trick in the book, legal or not, to do what they do. When we talked to Cliff Schechter, and he's talking about how they redistrict all these states. Of course they did. They legally could do that because they took control of those states in a census year. And voila. And they will control those states for 40 years because a bunch of Democrats sat down and had a pity party in 2010. I want to repeat that. The Republicans will control all those states for 40 years because a bunch of Democrats in 2010 had a pity party and did not vote. Simple. It's just simple. I want to make sure you understand this. When you look at what the Republicans did in the Senate, when Mitch McConnell and Chuck Grassley held up the Scalia seat and refused to fill it until the election, they can do that. And you may call that dishonest. You may call that a concern. But it's, you know, they could legally do that. In the same sense as when Ruth Bader Ginsburg tragically died, they could legally just jam this through. They haven't done anything illegal. And I could see that cab coming down the street in 2016 because a bunch of people who are basically throwing a pity party for themselves decided to sit out that election. Republicans will use every trick in the book to basically get as much leverage as they can, and they do it with amazing efficiency. They absolutely do. You cannot deny that. And once again, as much as you may not like hearing this, because Democrats have allowed them to take power as a minority power, they, because of that, they have taken and been able to do all this stuff legally. Legally. Also, it should be noted that Republicans today, they basically, they won't compromise. That if I was with an electric car company and I went to a Republican and say, hey, I want you to back up electric cars. Just say it like that. Here's $1 million to back up electric cars. $1 million. Republicans going to look at you like, hey, I'll take your $1 million, but there's no way in the planet I'm going to go out there and do a speech for you guys. It's not going to happen. They don't as much as they might take the money. They might give them lip service. I mean, but they're not going to compromise. This is why I was laughing so hard at the Carpenters Union when they came on in here and they said, oh, we're backing Republicans. And I said, I guarantee you, if any of the Republicans you back can be the deciding vote to get rid of all unions in the state of Minnesota, that they would sprint down the halls of the Capitol and say, yes, get rid of all the unions. They would. But because that's who they are. They don't compromise. And in a vacuum, lack of compromise, a willingness to never compromise might look like integrity. And that's a big problem. When Democrats don't show up, people look for other choices. Republicans look like a viable option. And the Republicans, also the voters, you have to understand something about these voters. These voters will show up. They have been brainwashed. I shared with you the story of the Republican guy that owned the hog farm down in Iowa who looked at me straight to my face and said, oh, yeah, Trump's policies on trade have been disastrous. But yet I'm going to stay with the guy. What? Because they're brainwashed. For 40 years, Republicans have heard, we're the strong, tough, masculine, manly party. We get things done. They're the wimpy little wuss ball party that wants to take all your money and basically make you submissive. 40 years of brainwashing has created this mess. And so they, even when they will acknowledge they're being hurt by Republicans, at no point do they even blink when it comes to voting. At best, they can hope for is the Democrats can hope for is that they just don't vote for Trump like they did in Wisconsin. Enough people did not vote for Trump, but sure didn't vote for Democrats. Democrats tie themselves in knots, trying to look like we're the noble ones. We're going to hold ourselves to a higher standard. Now, mind you, I'll give you a great example with this whole thing with in regards to like the adding people to the Supreme Court. Legally, Biden can do that. Legally, he can. But there's a lot of Democrats who are like, yeah, Republicans are going to call us cheaters. And I can't stand that, even though they're not. And so we're not going to do what we legally can. Because I want a moral victory. Shut up. No one wants to read your 80-page, strongly worded memo, you self-centered, self-righteous fool. Do you see how this game is getting played right now? You had better start understanding the archaic rules of state and federal law so that you can go out and play this game on the same level as the Republicans are. Because they're not breaking the law, but they're not, and they're unapologetic about how they do it. And you guys keep saying, we even have this made-up filibuster rule, but we're going to stand by it because we are better. No, you're just idiots. You're just idiots. Dear God, I could take the easy 4-foot jump shot. Instead, I'm going to go to the other side of the court and try to shoot a full court. Oh, I missed. Oh, well. Oops. Democrats as well have a really bad problem of basically selling out their ideals. I mean, if you right now, Democrats in the state should have shut down Line 3. They should have police reforms going in Minneapolis. You can't deny both are legit issues still. I mean, for God's sakes, the Line 3 pipe, that thing is going to pollute like crazy. It is a disaster. It's fossil fuel. It's like supporting Big Horseshoe at this point. No, we got cars. We don't need horses anymore, you idiots. But you got Big Horseshoe, and you're going out there, and you're trying to make sure the horseshoe industry is alive and vibrant. Stop it. No, you should have shut down Line 3. And a lot of you guys promised you would. A lot of you guys promised you would. Also, a lot of you guys promised that you were going to take care of police accountability, and you're going to make police more accountable. Well, dear God, have you seen the stories out of the Reformer? I got someone coming up in the 5 o'clock hour on that. And you guys sitting there going, well, I just don't think they need to do a full reform there. No, you guys have failed, because when it comes to someone offering you a few bucks, you guys will sell your damn souls. And you give up the ability to be great leaders. And in turn, you go on out like, you know, and I don't want to pick on Dean Phillips necessarily per se, but Dean Phillips is out there and he's getting Jim Ramstead's name put on the post office. And dear God, I mean, look at the victory we had today. Jim Ramstead, a Republican, he gets his name on the post office. We win! Shut up! No! That's not a victory. That is a minor... That's nothing. Shut down Line 3. Shut... You know, get some police accountability, for God's sakes. Healthcare for... Dear Lord, do anything you guys promised you were going to do! And then on top of it, Democratic voters, you just are kind of pathetic. You get I'm not going to vote for someone who I agree with 90% of the time, because I want someone who agrees with me all the time. Shut up. Shut up. Did you hear the guy whose hog lots are going to go under because of Republican policy? He doesn't even blink. He keeps voting Republican. You guys could have someone say, he didn't say please not hard enough. Please. Come on. You guys just... You guys cut off your nose to spite your face, or you just don't show up at all. Oh, God, if it's getting liquor sales on a Sunday, dear God, you got lines down the street. But Democrats all of a sudden having to show up because, you know, hey, God forbid we actually have a Supreme Court get overturned and turned into a nightmare Supreme Court. I'm sorry. I got gaming to do. I got things to watch. There's something on Bravo. I can't vote. God. Oh, and then you love to bitch about it. You love to put up your social media posts. You like to put your blog post out there. You like to show up for marches. But when it comes down to freaking voting, you guys fail and drop the ball consistently. Make no mistake. What is happening right now via the Supreme Court of the United States in Texas is a direct result, not of Republicans, but of the failures of Democrats to understand how the game is played, to showing up to vote, and having a freaking spine. And unless you guys change up what the hell you're doing, the Democrats are going to get legislated out of existence by a minority party while you guys sit there and talk about, let's get more language review to make sure we're more inclusive. Jeez. Get out there. Put on the frickin' brass knuckles and start fighting. Damn it, like you promised you would. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I'll give you a great example of what's wrong with the Democratic Party right now. Is I guarantee you there are more people who are, after that little rant of mine, writing a letter to this radio station talking about Matt's aggressive language needs to be reined in versus writing a letter to the DFL and saying, what the hell, guys? Why are you guys not out there fighting for what you guys are going to be fighting for? Because it's always easier to punch the guy who's sitting right next to you than get off your caboose and go over there across the room where the other guy that's really doing all the damage to you is there and get in their face. And so that's just the world we live in. But unless the Democrats realize, A, that you have to start finding every arcane rule that you can utilize and basically utilize it. And play this game on the Republicans level. And two, find you some Democrats, some DFLers who are not willing to sell out their own policies, even their own bills, for a campaign donation. And make them follow through on what they're promising to do. And then thirdly, get better Democrat voters. Democratic voters can't just sit there and talk the game. You gotta vote. And that means sometimes voting for someone that you might not agree with. Because you know what? Then you get Donald Trump. Then you get 10 years of a Supreme Court making atrocious rulings. Or everyone stays at home, like in 2010. And then all of a sudden, what do you get? You get gerrymandered states that will not be viable for Democrats to get control of again for 40 years. Stop having pity parties and start getting the damn work done. Hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Starting to lose my voice a little bit. Cracking a little bit. I'm going to make the point. And I need to make the point. Someone needs to make the point. When a Democrat sits there and goes, how did this happen? When you look at what Texas and the Supreme Court. I look at them and said, you didn't vote. Democrats didn't vote in 2010 and they didn't vote in 2016. That's how it happened. Democrats did this to themselves. And you just don't want to acknowledge that because, well, that was 5 years ago. No, that's what it took. In 4 years, he put three Supreme Court justices on there. The second they got Amy Coney Barrett on there, they basically pushed in the first. They were lining up to get, you know, these lawsuits looked at by the Supreme Court, and so that this was by design. You want to know how this happened? You didn't vote in 2016. If you didn't vote, I know I voted. But this is when I after that election in 2016, I said, you people that did not vote do not realize what they just did to themselves. And here you're seeing this. This is eat up. Have a big serving of this crap sandwich because this is the meal that you asked for when you threw a pity party and you didn't vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016. This is what you asked for. I don't know. I mean, it's tough love. It's hard to hear. I get it. But, you know, I'm tired of watching Democrats shoot themselves in the foot or look just for some sort of consolation prize all the frickin' time. You want to win this game, you got to start playing what Republicans do. And that's the reality of it. And that's just the political world we live in. 952-946-6205. Dan, I went and watched the worst baseball game I have ever seen in my entire life last night. Holy God. And it wasn't bad because of the Cubs. Or that rookie phenom kid, the Olympics guy that we had pitching on the mound last night. Was it Ryan is his name?
I'm sorry, I don't follow baseball.
Thank you, Ryan. Dan, I'm so glad that I brought you into this conversation. But it's Ryan, I believe, is his name. He pitched pretty well. He gave up one home run, and it was a three-run shot, and that was the game, 3-0. The disappointing part was watching the Twins hitting, which, I mean, come on, guys. I do not want to play the game on Wednesday night. But you're still getting paid to play a kid's sport. At least go up there and act like you want to be there. I mean, dear Lord, Miguel Sano yesterday, the strikeouts he had would look like me trying to hit major league pitching. I mean, it was just a joke. That's why I'm kind of glad Gophers are playing. Do you follow Gopher football at all? Are you a Gopher football fan?
No, I don't follow sports at all.
Well, thanks for your input there, Dan. the sports.
You know,
the sports take. It's time for sports takes with Dan. Dan, give it to me, baby. I hope Gophers Ohio State tonight.
I have no idea.
Thank you, Dan. All right. There you go. It's a 14-point spread, I think. I think it's going to be a closer game. I still think Ohio State's going to win it, but I think the Gophers are going to keep it close. I don't think it's going to be last-second deciding, but I think it's going to be a touchdown. So we'll have to see how that goes tonight. It's going to be in the rain. And if Ohio State, generally, their history is, if they're going to lose a game, they're going to lose a game early in the season. So this might, you know, play out, but you got to see what P.J. Fleck has out there.
Well, I did meet a fan from South Carolina today who asked for how do you get to the stadium on campus.
Was he a fan of our team?
I don't know. He just he was actually on West Broadway and wondered how do you get to the campus. And he was lucky. Being a teacher, I had, all day I had been planning lessons going, well, first A, then B, then C. And so when he asked, how do you get there? I said, you really want to get there? Okay. First A. And then I gave him five specific directions, I bet it got him there.
You got him to Kauffman Union. That's nowhere near the stadium. I got you to the theater department. That's on the other side of the river. That's on the other side of the river, the theaters. Oh.
Well, he said, I just get him there and he could make it.
Yeah, we got a guy who doesn't know anything about sports trying to give people directions to sports facilities. Well, sorry, sir. I hope you enjoy Burnsville. It's lovely this time of year. Thanks, Dan. Good to see you here today. 952-946-6205. Okay, a lot of things I got to try to get to. Sven Sundgaard joining us, talking weather. We got to talk about what in the world happened with Ida that it got so bad. That was weird. Also, got to take a look at the Labor Day forecast, Labor Day weekend forecast coming up here. COVID update, Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Minnesota Department of Health includes 1,904 new cases. Dear God, it's getting worse. 22 newly reported deaths, 21 of them happening in August. Holy cow. The state's death toll is 7,839. That's since the start of the pandemic. As of August 30th, the state reported that 3,322,642 people have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. 3,122,523 people have completed the vaccine series. Through September 1st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 631. That's up from 614 reported on Wednesday. God, why are these numbers all of a sudden just skyrocketing out of control? That's, you know, 17 more people in the hospital in one day. Of those hospitalized, 163 people are in intensive care. 468 are in general hospital care. Spring surge saw 202 and 517, but we're getting close. We're probably going to surpass that. The 1,904 positive on Thursday update were from 39,538 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 4.81. According to Johns Hopkins University, the positivity rate over the past 7 days is 6.83. It also should be mentioned the Minnesota police system saw an uptick in August for exposure calls to ivermectin, a drug falsely claimed to treat COVID-19. Ivermectin is a dewormer drug used for pets and livestock. In this form, the drug can be highly concentrated and could be toxic if taken by humans, but it doesn't stop them because they're smart. I'm now a doctor, according to Google. A recent National Institute health clinic has also found insufficient data to recommend ivermectin as a COVID-19 treatment. However, misinformation has led to some turning to ivermectin amid the rise in the Delta variant. But hey, you know, who doesn't like to deworm themselves every once in a while, huh? Yeah. Dear Lord. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum and top hospital officials assembled at a news conference on Wednesday to deliver a uniform message. If residents don't seek COVID-19 vaccines, wear masks, and resume social distancing at greater rates, the state's health care system become overwhelmed in the weeks ahead. Funny, you talk about personal responsibility. You go with the personal responsibility route. When personal responsibility is clearly not being a good thing for you, what do? Come on, be more personally responsible as opposed to actually, I don't know, as the governor of the state, imposing some rules to try to keep these people safe. But God forbid. States like Mississippi, where hospitals have reached their breaking point, should provide North Dakotans with a cautionary tale, Burgum said. It could happen here because we have some of the same characteristics of limited hospital capacity and low vaccination rates. Leaders from health group giants Sanford, Essentia, Altrua, CHI, St. Alexis, and Trinity said hospitals in the state's biggest cities are already pushing up against their limits and staffing issues abound, and COVID-19 hospitalization shoot up. Fueled by the highly contagious Delta variant, North Dakota's COVID-19 infectious disease increased fivefold in August. Hospital officials like Sanford in Bismarck and President Dr. Michael LeBeau project the state's peak in cases won't come until at least late September. So trouble there as well. 952-946-6205. I want to go back to the reformer story from yesterday. You want an ugly story. If you have not read Dina Winter's exceptional expose on what exactly happened 4 days after George Floyd, when the Minneapolis Police Department decided to become a gang and open fire unannounced in an unmarked vehicle on a innocent civilian in the streets. And when that civilian started firing back at them because he thought he was being attacked, they not only went out there and arrested him and beat him profusely in the middle of the street, but then they also went out there and charged him with a crime they knew he didn't do, because the body cam footage showed the man was innocent. Well, and by the way, and yesterday I should mention once again, two officers in the trial stated that the police officers like targeting civilians. What the? Really? Wow. And one lieutenant was so incensed that white supremacists were getting blamed for the problems in the city of Minneapolis, that he basically called for what sounds like fraudulent arrests to basically run cover for the white supremacists. Really? Dear Lord. Anyway, the latest, this is also Dina Winter, exceptional. And by the way, if Dina Winter doesn't win some awards for this coverage, there's a crime going on. The Reformer has obtained 4 body camera videos from the incident on 14th Avenue and Lake Street, which a St. Paul man shot at Minneapolis SWAT team after they fired less lethal rubber bullets at him from an unmarked van while he stood in a parking lot. The incident, which took place 5 days after George Floyd's murder, rocked the city, was the subject of the yesterday story from the Reformer. St. Paul driver Jaleel Stallings, 29, fired 3 shots at the Minneapolis police officers. A veteran, by the way. Fired 3 shots at the Minneapolis police officers after they fired rubber bullets at him and others without warning from a darkened cargo van that was crawling along Lake Street at night. Once again, an unmarked police vehicle. Stallings was recently acquitted of 8 charges stemming from the shooting after testifying during the trial that he didn't know who they were, cops, and thought they might be white supremacists. Governor Walz had warned citizens about them. The body cam videos released by the city's attorney office to Stallings' attorney Wednesday shows only the shooting of about 9 minutes of the aftermath before the SWAT team was told to shut off their cameras. Yes. More than the 2 hours worth of videos obtained by Stallings' attorney may be released after a hearing later this month. Once again, they don't, even though the cat's out of the bag, they're still trying to prevent the public from seeing what they did. Oh, and by the way, it's there comes a point here where we have to look at Chief Arredondo and sort of say, you know, yeah, you're not necessarily doing the citizens' bidding here. I'll get to that in a second. The body cam videos, In the video, the van is driving on Lake Street as Sergeant Andrew Battelle tells the SWAT team there's a group in the parking lot to the north, and they begin firing at Stallings, who immediately returns fire. When the officers yell, shots fired, and jump in the van, Stallings lies down on the ground and drops his weapon. And by the way, it should be noted, once again, these police officers, these gang member cops of the SWAT team, not only open up fire unannounced and in an unmarked vehicle on Stallings, they hit him square in the chest with a what they call a non-lethal round. So he clearly thought he was under attack. But yet the veteran Stallings, the military veteran Stallings, when he returned fire, was purposely not aiming for the officers. He's just trying to scare them away. How is it that the guy who's already been shot has enough, you know, enough to his presence to just still just try to scare these people away? Meanwhile, the police, who once again on a marked vehicle, it says protect and serve, they're aiming for doing damage to human beings on the first shot unannounced. None of those people should ever carry a weapon again. They can't be trusted with them. And frankly, if I can make a point, Stallings should be in charge of your weapons program over at the Minneapolis Police Department, because he's the only one in this entire damn story that seems to have any understanding how weapons actually work, or the frame of mind to actually use one in a high-stress situation. Minneapolis police clearly don't. 952-946-6205. Tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to take a break right now. When I do come back, I'll get back into the story, run what's in the rest of the videos, tell you what Arredondo's response was, and just make you fuming mad right before we get to Sven. How about that? 952-946-6205. It's 6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. All right, we're going to go through the rest of the story here on the Reformer, and then we'll get to Sven coming up here in just a sec. 952-946-6205. So, in the videos, the van is driving on Lake Street. As Sergeant Andrew Patel tells the SWAT team, there's a group in the parking lot, began firing at Stallings. When the officers yell, "Shots fired, shot fires," they jump out of the van, he's down, then drops his weapon. Stallings has said that when he realized they were, that's when he realized they were cops. Patel had earlier given his unit orders to drive down Lake Street. You see a group, call it out. Okay, great. Blank them up. Gas them. Blank them up. His body cam video shows that in the roughly 20 seconds it took the officers to approach Stallings, that Stallings had dropped his gun on the ground, was face down the pavement with his hands on his side. "You blanking piece of blank," Officer Justin Stetson yells, begins kicking and punching Stallings on the head and neck. Stallings repeatedly tries to surrender, saying, listen, sir, I'm trying to," as they beat him, with Patel kneeling and punching Stallings in the stomach, chest, and back. For about 30 seconds, Patel and Stetson punch and kick Stallings in the head, neck, stomach, chest, and back. Midway through, Stetson tells Stallings, and by the way, the entire time, their initial report was he was fleeing the scene and resisting arrest. The lying sacks of crap. These officers are just liars. That's all they are. They are just horrible human beings that should not only not be in a police uniform, they should be in jail for what they did here. They should be. Midway through, Stetson tells Stallings to put his arms behind his back. Stallings repeatedly says, "I'm trying to," but is unable because an officer appears to be sitting on his arm while punching him. After handcuffing him, Patel sits Stallings up, kicks him in the ribs as Stetson continues lifting him in the hitting him in the head. Patel tells Stetson to stop hitting Stallings, but he continues even after Patel says, "That's it, stop it," until Patel finally grabs his hand and says, "It's okay." Oh, the compassionate officer finally shows up. You piece of scum. You piece of scum. Patel radios the incident as other officers repeatedly tased the other person who was with Stallings, causing the man to scream in pain. When the officers roll Stallings over, he looks dazed, bloodied, and unresponsive. Gee willikers, I wonder how that happened. Patel orders him to be moved into the recovery position. Mind you, the only reason this guy has to be in the recovery position is because the police officers beat the living daylights out of him after they ambushed him like a gangland shooting. He returned fire, and then when they came at him, he surrendered, and they beat him on the ground. Wow. After Stallings is arrested, the officers gather for the debriefing. "Did anybody shoot?" Sergeant Patel asks his unit. Nobody says they had. Officers do not mention that they shot Stallings with rubber bullets before he fired back. "Who are our shooters?" a responding officer asks Patel. "Nobody. He shot at us. Then he gave up," replies Patel. Liar. Liar. Well, I mean, I can't say. The other guys lied. Patel is only relaying what they said. Battelle reportedly says Stallings shot at the van, says Stallings shot right in the van at us, engaged with authorities. The other officers agree, saying they didn't shoot at Stallings. They're the lying sacks of crap there. During a December court hearing, the officer said they meant they didn't shoot him with live ammunition from a lethal weapon. Oh, you misunderstood scamps. With a non-lethal weapon. Sure, I shot him with that, which he wouldn't have known the difference of because he was under fire, but oopsie, lying pieces of crud. About 9 minutes after the shooting, the unit was ordered to turn off their body cameras. Oh, okay. In response to the reformer story, Minneapolis Police Chief Madeira Arredondo released a statement indicating the incident was under investigation, saying, I'm aware of the recent decision by the Honorable Judge Koch, who, as a part of his decision, noted context is important. The officers have just been through 4 days of rioting, looting, arson, and burning of the third precinct. Peaceful protests sometimes quickly escalate to violence. We respect the judicial process as well, the internal investigation process, which is currently active. First of all, let me say this, Chief, you wouldn't be having an investigation unless this came out in publicly. If not for Dina Winter's exceptional stories, you would be burying this. So stop acting like you really give a rat's butt whether or not the justice is found out. You had a year and months with this video, and you absolutely did not hold your own people accountable until it became to public light, and now you're scrambling to make it seem like you actually give a rat's butt. Shut up, Chief. Just shut up. But let me go back and go back to your points here. It had been a tough – do you know what's a tough thing? When you're just a regular civilian in the city of Minneapolis and all of a sudden a unmarked white van rolls by and someone starts shooting at you from the van. Imagine that's real stressful. As well as also being beaten publicly by police officers in the street because they need to blow off some steam. Is that what your argument is there? Is that what you're saying is that, hey, yeah, they beat the living daylights out of that guy, an innocent guy who was attacked and basically defended himself. But they beat him up because, you know, they're stressed. They didn't have their stress balls. They didn't have their fidget spinners. That's why they had to beat him up because of that. That's the reason why. What did you say here? It's important to note that officers have been through 4 days writing peaceful protest sometimes quickly escalate to violence. Oh, how convenient. See, that's why they like targeting civilians, is because you can just already see, just we're going to be presumptive that the peaceful protest is going to turn violent. So we're just going to start shooting random people or beating random people. Come on, man. This is a joke. Here's the statement. Yesterday's Minneapolis was disgusted. A lot of us are beyond being shocked by Dina Winter's Minnesota Reformer story about Jalee Stallings' treatment at the hands of the Minneapolis Police Department. The Reformer secured body cam footage of this. What does our reform-minded police chief have to say about this? Minneapolis Chief Arredondo issued a statement to CARE 11. I'm aware of the recent decision by the Honorable Judge. Part of this decision, officers have been through a lot of this here. Peaceful protests sometimes quickly escalate. We respond to the judicial processes and the internal investigations. We respect the judicial process as well as the internal investigation process, which is currently active. For that reason, I'll not comment at this time. Context is important. Part of this decision noted context is important. I can't think of any context, and I'm going to back up this story as well. I can't think of any context where police officers should be rolling up on the scene unannounced and opening fire on innocent civilians on the street. I can't think of any context. I know that you guys are all probably trying to find some way to still vilify the Stallings and turn him into some sort of demon creature. That's why we had fire first. He was a demon creature. There's no context that justifies this. There sure as hell is no context when you got a guy who's surrendering on the ground to have officers beating him to the point where they have to put him in a recovery position from the beating the police gave him. Mind you, and can I just make this point? You absolute pieces of garbage, all of you. This was 4 days after George Floyd, when it should have been clear that aggressive techniques by the police need to be sidelined, need to be stopped. You jackasses ramped them up. You fools made it even more obscene, the amount of violence you are willing to put on the innocent civilians of the city. All of you officers, you knew Stallings was innocent. You knew that he hadn't done anything, and yet you still put him in jail. You still charged him with a crime. You still made him go to court, and the judges are like, what in the hell are you doing here? Even they thought you guys might be a little mentally off. All of you guys should be fired. All of you should be fired. Everyone, anyone that knew what exactly had happened there and still went along with the lie should be fired. And any fake piety or earnestness that you guys are putting forward now that Dina Winter has cracked open your little egg, the hell with that. And the same thing goes with the city attorneys. Any of you clowns that went along with this should go to jail at the... I'm sorry, I think all of you should be going to jail. And I think the psychopaths and the SWAT team need to get mental evaluations immediately. They like to shoot civilians. Really? They like targeting civilians. Yeah, don't tell me this police department doesn't need a major, major refitting. At least, sounds like it just needs to be torn down to the basement and started all over again because it's so corrupt and broken that they don't even see when they have such no-brainer. Yeah, you're all fired and we need to, so let's not charge us. Let's get this guy home and apologize. You have that presented to you. You guys go on out there and say, no, he was the criminal. Hey, we were the nice guys. We put him in recovery after we beat the living daylights out of him. Give me a medal. I'm not saying you said give me a medal, but you guys are just absolute trash. Absolute trash. When we do return, then we'll talk to Sven Sundgaard. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Sven Sundgaard, of course, is the weather guy extraordinaire. Bringmethenews.com, Premier Living. You can find his weather forecast there. YouTube as well. He's kind enough to join us as he has on these Thursdays to talk a little bit about the weather. Up in Wisconsin. Where are you at in Wisconsin?
I'm in beautiful Frederick, Wisconsin.
Frederick. It is actually nice. I've been there. It's a nice little town.
Yeah, I'm about to do musical bingo, so you caught me before I've had any beer in me.
Well, I'm glad we got you that one. Congratulations. You called it last week. We indeed did stay warm enough to where 2021, the meteorological summer, that's from June 1st to the end of August, was the hottest summer on record.
Yeah, and it wasn't hard to call even a few weeks ago. I started crunching the numbers after the first week of August, just plugging in, the average of computer model data. And then even if we assumed the last week of August was normal temperatures, we still were going to narrowly win. So it was kind of in the bag just because of that heat we had in June, which is just, it just, again, should stand out to people how hot June was, that gave us the running start where nobody could really catch up to us. After July, we were kind of down in the second and third place, and then we got that little burst of heat, remember, a couple weeks ago. Just a couple 90s in the middle of August was enough to push us back into the number one spot. And a lot of people, I've explained this a few times in weather videos and stuff, and I don't know if we've been over here, but the key was that our heat was consistent this summer, because a lot of people are like, wait, how is it hotter than 1988? We had 44 days in the 90s and it was like 100 five times. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, we only, in air quotes, had 26 90s this summer, and we didn't hit 100. We did hit 99. We got close one day. But basically, once we hit June 2nd, it was warmer than normal, or even much warmer than normal, every single day right up until the end of August. In 1988, people remember the heat, of course, but we started June cool, and we ended August cool that year. So it was actually in the 60s a couple times for highs. We didn't get anywhere near that cool. And of course, our nights were warmer. And, the thing I'm telling people, too, is it's not just, wow, it was the hottest summer ever recorded, which is 148 years of records. But the fact that the heat was consistent and we beat out those other years is really the very troubling sign that this is a climate change thing. This is not, we would not have done this without the extra heat in the Northern Hemisphere. And you know, I know you saw my video yesterday and people can go back and watch it. I compared what the Northern Hemisphere looked like in 1988 to this year. It was cooler than average across the Northern Hemisphere in 1988. We just have a surplus of heat. And if you did just a rudimentary analysis, I did it yesterday, subtract the heat that we have in the Northern Hemisphere this year, we would have, instead of had 26 days in the 90s, we would have had 18. And instead of being the hottest summer ever, we probably would have been fourth or fifth hottest. So it still would have been a hot summer, but it would not have been the summer of the caliber that we had.
And it's interesting because the way you just put it, it's like there are some years you get a big, and we have a lot of snow, but it's all one massive snowfall, and it just has a regular snowfall year. What would be equivalent of this would be is like if we had 3 inches of snow every single stinking day falling from the sky to where it builds up. I mean, then all of a sudden you can say, well, things are changing. That doesn't, you know, that's not supposed to happen like that. And that's what happened. Do you know, did we break the record? I don't know if you're aware of this. Did we break the record for most days over, say, 80 degrees in the summer?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure. I can go back and look at that. That would be an interesting stat because that would show that consistent heat, you know, because we had a lot of days right around 90, 89, 90 degrees. So, and that tells you that, oh boy, if just that extra little bit of heat kind of pushed us there. You know, another thing is our nights were warm. So, and I talked about this a few different times over the course of the summer. Yes, the 90s, and yes, the streaks of 90s were impressive, but also just how incredibly warm the nights were. And not just in the urban heat island, nights are warmer everywhere. And that also is what helped push us up because we averaged the highs and the lows for all 92 days of the summer. And I've had to explain this a lot over the last few days. People are like, wait, there's still a few weeks of summer. So why don't you tabulate it that way? I'm like, first of all, we like even months for statistics, but also it really does make sense. The meteorological seasons, the astronomical seasons don't make sense. When you're looking at weather, when you're looking at temperatures and climate, because June 20th is the peak sun. So really you could make the argument that summer should be probably sometime around May 10th to the end of July with the peak of the sun in the middle of that. And then because the atmosphere lags the sun, just like preheating an oven, by about a month, then you get June, July, August. So it really does, and then each of the other seasons, it really does make more sense to have June, July, August be summer because not just in Minnesota, but anywhere by September 21st or 22nd, it's really not summer anymore from any weather or climate standpoint.
I want to talk about Ida because what happened in the Northeast is I'm a little confused because, all right, so Ida hits a bad hurricane. I mean, some of the images of the damage that it did in Louisiana into Mississippi, just terrifying. And yet, but it kind of, you know, it was a tropical depression. It's raining a lot, goes across Tennessee, heads toward the Northeast. What happened to when it got up into Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, that it got supersized again into a massive rain event?
Yeah. So when systems merge, you get that extra energy and extra moisture. And part of the problem, you know, ton of wind damage and a lot of tornadoes out of this yesterday. But really the troubling thing is the extreme flooding, because remember New York City and that whole area got walloped with Henry a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
And they got 5-6 inches of rain, so that ground is saturated. And they got the radar estimates of the last 36 hours in that area are anywhere from 6 to 12 inches of water rainfall. So you add that with the totals of a couple weeks ago, some places have seen a foot and a half of water in 2 weeks. You know, you just can't take that anymore. And especially in an urban area, you know, we see and we get these torrential downpours. Haven't seen many this summer, but in the city, it can overwhelm the sewer system because everything's running off of pavement. And, you know, our sewer systems, New York is no different. If anything, it's more outdated. Our sewer systems are not adapted to the changing climate, an atmosphere that holds more water, that has the potential for more extreme rainfall events. So, yeah, it got a little boost from extra energy from another system and just the kind of normal energy that would feed thunderstorms like for us, all merging with the leftovers of a tropical system, which still had a ton of moisture. Any of those tropical systems are still carrying a ton of water content and a ton of vorticity, a ton of spin, because the thing is spinning. You can imagine like a top, and then it slows down as it moves over land, and that just creates tons of of energy and spin in the atmosphere. So that's why they get a lot of tornadoes when hurricanes make landfall initially. But even as the systems continue to move on, you know, New York is really a great example of how climate change and these tropical systems merge to create disasters. You know, Hurricane Sandy, you know, we told everybody when Hurricane Sandy happened, this is not going to be unique. This kind of thing is going to be happening more and more frequently. And I don't think most of us even thought it would be happening as frequently as it has. Two of these systems in one summer, you know, and then Sandy. I mean, this is really troubling. And, you know, how do you update the infrastructure of a city like New York to adapt to a changing climate? I know I had retweeted AOC this morning, regardless of if you agree with the Green New Deal or anything, she has a point. You know, people said we can't spend this money to adapt our infrastructure. Well, what's more expensive, dealing with a disaster or trying to mitigate it and get ahead of it?
Yeah, it's the wrong way to do it, to try to do everything on the backside, to always kind of, if I may, ask for forgiveness as opposed to ask please beforehand. And I think we have to get that mentality when it comes to these things. And it also should be mentioned, yeah, if you're in New York City, you're in Philadelphia, any wetlands that used to be there, that used to absorb this water and does fairly well, they're long gone. And so you've got 10 feet of concrete on top of those and filled in lands and harbors that have been expanded. So you really, I mean, when you look at New York City particularly, there is a recipe for disaster there, because there's, you know, as you say, this is a city that is easily prone to flooding. And we're just realizing when we start seeing more and more of these events that New York City itself is going to be a city that they're going to have to fix this somehow.
Yeah, and it's a perfect storm. It was a wet summer there, so the ground, unlike here, is already saturated, and they got Henry, and now the leftovers of Ida. And that's partly why Ida was such a mess in Louisiana, too. They've had a very wet summer there, too.
Yeah.
Parts of Louisiana are a foot and a half above normal for annual rainfall. I mean, that's just atrocious. And, of course, it's flat as a pancake, and some of it's below sea level, and you get a major hurricane like this. And you know, we're not quite at the peak of hurricane season yet in the Atlantic. So there's a lot of time to get through here over the next several weeks.
I got a question for you, a listener who very much is very happy that you do visit with us. And I am as well, very grateful that you have some time with our Sven Sundgaard, of course, joining us, bringmeinthenews.com. She had a question about something you'd mentioned about conditions getting better for forest fires. And it sounds like things have actually turned around a little bit up in Minnesota, northern Minnesota, and they're reopening up some of the boundary waters this weekend. The other fire there, the Greenwood fire, they're expecting to have that completely wrapped up, hopefully contained by October latest. But she had the question, who says, okay, obviously rain does help, but if it's not been raining a lot, what other conditions? She was asking about humidity. How does that make fighting fires easier and better?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Rain is very obvious. And I think a lot of people would be surprised that, you know, light rain showers coming through a big fire almost have zero impact on the fire itself if there's not people fighting there. So we have to tip our hats and whatever else, give raises to all these fire crews out
Indeed.
There doing this just insane work out there. Because, yeah, when they get days that are like this, if it's cloudy, cooler, relative humidities are higher, it allows them to fight the fire because the fire isn't spreading as quickly. You know, when you get, you know, what we saw a couple times last week was as things heated up during the day, automatically the relative humidity drops. You know, if you keep the moisture content the same, you heat up the air, the humidity is going to drop because the humidity is a percentage of the water in the air compared to what it can hold at that temperature. When you raise the temperature, that percentage goes down. That means that the air is absorbing more moisture potentially. There's more evaporation happening, so things dry very quickly. And when it's in the sun and you add the wind, those are all horrible conditions. So if you can reverse all of those variables, decrease the winds, increase the humidity, get rid of the sun, that allows them to really attack the fire because it's just not spreading at the same pace. It's when they get these explosive eruptions and spreading of fires that they just can't. There's no way to keep up with that. It's just you have to just watch it burn and wait for the weather to change. But they did also, on top of the Greenwood fire last week, and get about 1 to 2 inches of rain, which was huge. And basically you could see it go from no containment to jumping up to about 37%, and now, yeah, getting to the point of almost completely having that fire contained, all because they got just thank God, got some good downpours right on top of that fire. Now, north of there, where there are some other fires, they got a much less rainfall. And overall, northeastern Minnesota saw a fraction of the rain that we did last weekend. So the Twin Cities now is out of those extreme categories of drought, severe and extreme, to just moderate drought now, all because of the rain we had last week. August was above normal. We went into the top 10 wettest August after that incredibly dry period. But northern Minnesota was not the same scenario.
And when you bring up fires that are out of control, look at what's going on in California. I mean, they can't it's almost like the fire crews out there, they do everything in their power to try to get some of those massive fires under control, and it just is nothing they can do because the conditions there are just it wants to burn.
Yeah. You know, I did an interview with an organization yesterday, and they asked me to rank – they asked me to pick like five of the worst weather states to live in as far as danger and disaster, and California was one of those. All the Gulf states, because I said, whatever you get there can last. You know, if you're in a flood situation, Louisiana, it can keep flooding because they don't get a drastic change in the seasons. You know, whereas here, we saw it this firsthand, we can get into a bad drought, but the season does change inevitably, no matter what. You know, July is not going to last forever here. Winter does come eventually. And so if you have fires raging, that's going to change the game. California has a natural fire season that lasts for months, and they're in the middle of it right now. So, well, you know, if you're sitting in Ely and it was very dry as it was a month ago, you can say, well, it's going to rain eventually. It will rain at some point in the next month or two. If you're in California, there's no guarantee of that. You don't just bust the drought. If anything, the droughts get worse and worse because rainfall is decreasing overall through the year. They really rely on the winter months only for moisture. And yeah, so they're in the thick of it. The conditions only continue to be bad at this time of year there.
Going back to Minnesota and coming up with looking at this weekend, speaking of rain, Gophers, Ohio State tonight, they are playing in rain. It looks like the rain's going to come in here early enough to where it's going to play a factor in the game. How much rain are we going to get in this next stretch?
Anywhere from about a half inch to maybe a few lucky places will get an inch. And yeah, the showers are just, there's some very light rain falling on Lake Minnetonka right now. This rain has had a hard time making its way east of the day, but it's starting to make some progress. So yeah, they might have some light rain, but you know, is that anything worth stopping a football game for? I don't know.
Not at all.
It's not like baseball where they're afraid of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there isn't a lot of lightning in it right now, so that's good. At least the initial couple of hours should just be a fairly light rain because we're really trying to moisten up the atmosphere. We had some pretty dry air, not just the surface, but in the aloft the last couple of days, and so this plume of moisture has been working its way east. So, yeah, I would say most of us are going to get about a half inch, but you know, if you're in the western suburbs, you could end up with an inch. But further west central Minnesota, you know, out towards Wilmer, Alexander, that's where it could add up to 2 inches plus. It's been raining there all day today and will continue to rain through the night tonight. So that's where they're going to get more. But nobody's going to get the kind of totals that we had last week out of this.
Will it clear out for the Labor Day weekend?
I think most of it will. Tomorrow will be crummy. You know, I think a good day to be traveling if you're headed somewhere. It's going to be dreary. I don't think a lot of rain tomorrow, but there will be a few showers around, especially in the morning. There could still be some scattered light rain. But the afternoon should be just kind of dreary, cloudy, sort of like it is now. You know, we didn't hit 70 today, too, which, by the way, is a milestone. The last time we haven't hit 70 degrees was Memorial Weekend. May 30th was the last day in the 60s. So we have that going for us. I don't know that we'll hit 70 tomorrow either. So that would be two in a row, which the last time we did that was Memorial Weekend. But yeah, I think we could start Saturday with some clouds, but I think it will go out for the afternoon. Sunday looks mostly sunny, Monday too, and the temperatures will reflect that as well. Probably mid-70s Saturday, mid to maybe upper 70s Saturday, or Sunday rather, in Labor Day, with a few spots in southwestern Minnesota popping back into the 80s. And there could be a slow warming trend through the week next week. So we are not done with summer temperatures yet. Not that I don't think anybody thought after this summer that we would be.
Sven Sundgaard, of course, the weather forecaster at bringmethenews.com, Premier Living, also at YouTube. Sven, have fun tonight. It sounds like you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I think the music category is 80s. I don't know how I'll do, but whatever.
Okay.
I'll update you next week.
I might be at the Chainsmokers tonight over at the State Fair. Text me if you have any tough ones, because trust me, as a guy who works in radio and that grew up in the 80s, I stuff. If I can help you, I'll do my best, okay?
I was a mere, I don't know.
All right. Sven Sundgaard, thank you very much. Have a great night. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap up the show for a Thursday. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thanks to Sven. I might actually hit the Chainsmokers concert, but it's going to be raining out there. Hey, Dan, producer Dan, let me ask you this. What is your favorite Chainsmokers song?
I really am not up on what that category of music is.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks. I purposely, I was going to take a, I took a wild guess that you probably had no idea the Chains. They're kind of do dance music, pop dance music. All right.
Oh, okay.
They're pretty good, actually. Pretty good. I took a chance you didn't know that. What is your favorite play in town right now that you want to go see? Anything in town right now playing that you like? Because you like the theater, so I'll throw you a bone.
Well, the only one that I know that it's actually running is the Music Man at Chan Dinner Theater.
Yeah. All right. My daughter went with her grandmother to see that. Mm-hmm. That's always a good one.
Oh yeah, I've been in it and I've ran audio for it and everything.
Who'd you play in it?
Oh, I was. It was when I was in high school. I was one of the boys in the band.
Okay. Oh, God. Pick a little, talk a little, pick a little, talk a little, pick, talk a little. Oh, great music in there. So which one did you play? What instrument?
Oh, I think I was one of the horns.
Okay.
One of the big brass horns.
Da 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 da. Good. That's a fun one. It's a good one to be part of. Quickly, just one thing I want to mention here with Sven. I just want to mention the story. Portions of the Boundary Water Canoe Area Wilderness reopening on Saturday thanks to recent rain, cooler weather, and progress the firefighters have made fighting the wildfires across northern Minnesota. Superior National Flip, the full closure of the BWCAW and the Crooked Lake closure near the fires in Canada. It's slightly modifying closure maps of the Greenwood Fire and the John Eck and Welp fires, and the closure of the U.S. Forest Service land in the Upper Gunflint Trail remains in place, unfortunately. We're thrilled to reopen some of our public lands to visitors. And as Sven said it, kudos to the firefighters up there who, you know, the weather started playing nice here. We'll turn on this. And they were able to get this under control. And I want to make sure we understand, if you want to understand how bad those fires are in California – that same level of competence that we just saw on display here with these firefighters getting up there into that wilderness where there's no roads and they're cutting paths to basically be able to fight this thing. They're doing the same thing out there and they're having zero luck. I mean, it just is a nightmare out there. The news comes as a 40-square-mile Greenwood fire is now expected to be brought to complete control by October 10th, a month later than earlier forecast, officials said Wednesday. The date was changed because the difficulty in extinguishing many of the hotspots across the long, vast fire perimeter, said Clark McCready, spokesman for the interagency team managing the fire. That's not hard to understand, considering it's a massive fire, and a lot of these areas where the fringe areas are, you have to cut a path, too, to get to it, so... Nice job, guys, up there. Well done, and thank you very much for keeping Minnesota a little safe. We do appreciate that. Native Roots Radio, they are up next. You have a good one. Till tomorrow, see ya.